but as a set of lower case skills that you might use and utilize in different areas of your work. Maybe kind of the workshop stuff is part of your work and part of your portfolio career. I think the skills of being able to design and develop workshops is going to be super interesting to see how people start to build and utilize these in the next few months.
Hey, Fran, it's David Nabinski here in New York City. So excited for this Portfolio Career podcast with Howard Gray. As you may recall, Howard was a prior guest on the show. At the time, we talked a lot about lowercase skills and how important they were to developing your portfolio career. On this episode, you'll learn about a new lowercase skill that Howard has been spending a lot of time on, which is online workshops. And he is also empowering people and helping people to create their own workshops. He has a workshop on workshops. Got that? And I've been a big beneficiary of workshops. And so we have a really great conversation about this. His workshop on workshops is coming up. The registration is May 4th. You can learn more at howardgray.net. And his company is called Wavetable. You'll learn about how creating a workshop can help you develop a community around your work and accelerate your ideas. You also learn about another new idea of Howard's that I was really excited to talk about, which is hidden networks. Just like one email away, I think that we are also hidden to a lot of opportunities that allow us to make progress. How you can start to map things and evaluate opportunities that you may be overlooking. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Howard.
Well, Howard, great to see you. Thanks for coming back to the podcast, round two.
Indeed, my pleasure.
It seems more than a year ago, but I'm sure it was a couple more days than a year, but it's been too long, and obviously some things have changed. One place I'd love to start, though, is last podcast, we talked a lot about lowercase skills.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious to hear a little bit more if there's any new lowercase skills that you've been working on, call it over the last couple of months.
Yes. Thank you for picking up on that thread. I still very much believe in lowercase skills. For anyone listening who's curious about that, you can check out our previous conversation. I guess a set of, maybe they're not necessarily lowercase skills, but maybe like hidden skills that I'm quite bullish about right now, and bullish about anyway, but particularly more recently in this kind of new paradigm we find ourselves in, is workshop skills. And I've been developing mine over the last few years, and I only really thought of them as a complete skill set fairly recently. But I think it's very interesting because everyone is talking about what the future of work is going to look like and things like that. And that's been a conversation, again, that's been happening for a while, but seems to be accelerated with what's going on right now. And when people talk about the future of work and the skills that we need, often most people go to automation and hard skills like tech skills and particular coding languages and things like that, which are absolutely going to be very important. But I'm very curious about soft skills. I don't love that term, but most people kind of get that as a catch-all. And within that, one of the skill sets that I found particularly interesting that I've been kind of practicing and developing through my work is workshop skills. And what I mean by that is being able to design, build, and also deliver workshops. And workshops can take on a number of different flavors. I know you've been involved in lots of different workshops with Seth Godin and in other places too. Workshops can be 1 hour interactive sessions. They can be 1 month fellowships. They can be kind of year long, all kinds of different flavors. And they can be for strategy or for operational stuff or team meetings or for education. But I think those skills involved in being able to design a process, create space for people, develop interactive activities, being able to facilitate a group, facilitate kind of conversation and kind of public speaking and presentation skills are part of this too. I think that skill set is quite underrated. And I sense, particularly now as we're entering this new era or new chapter, that set of skills are very much a set of lowercase skills that you may not be a workshopper as your kind of main thing, but as a set of lowercase skills that you might use and utilize in different areas of your work. Maybe kind of the workshop stuff is part of your work and part of your portfolio career. I think the skills of being able to design and develop workshops is going to be super interesting to see how people start to build and utilize these in the next few months.
And so you've run the workshop on how to create a workshop. And I would be curious to hear the people that have attended and participated in the past, you know, what kind of ideas they came with and the kind of the demographic of those people, and how are they thinking that having workshop creation skills could accelerate their work?
So the first iteration of this was back, probably about a year ago. I did a 2-hour free thing on how to build workshops. Again, it's very meta. That was in person. I did a few of those. They're really fun. And in February, just gone, so a couple of months ago, it feels like prehistoric times now as we're talking in mid-April, but back in February, I ran an online version of this that was much longer. It was 1 month, and it was sort of 4 1-week sprints. We had about 35 people from all over the world joining us. And in that, people were learning these workshop skills, or kind of workshop mindsets is how I like to think of it. So there's this idea of how do we think like someone who creates workshops? How do we design like someone who creates workshops, and so on? So I like to think of them more as the mindsets first, and then the skills kind of come from that thinking first. The people that were joining us, a lot are independent creatives. A lot of people have got portfolio careers. So probably the kind of people that are tuned into this kind of podcast who are thinking about what else they can do with their work, how they can take their expertise into interesting places and deliver value for the people they want to connect with. A lot were working in creative industries. So a lot of people who are doing kind of photography and graphic design, things like that, had an interesting kind of line around people who are doing coaching and diversity and inclusion work as well. So people that are looking to facilitate groups and help people and groups of people kind of go beyond in their work or kind of work through challenges they've got. And a few people were building more kind of innovation and design thinking type workshops. And then there was another group, if we sort of segment the people that I've noticed have been interested in this, who are doing some more esoteric stuff. So we had one person who was doing something around how do we destigmatize end of life? So how do we think about death in different ways? Now, that's probably the ultimate kind of, maybe not stigmatized topic, but a challenging topic for many of us to talk about. And so he was creating workshops on how do we make death something that we can talk about more openly? How can we understand the topic of death? How can we prepare for it, either for ourselves or for our loved ones? And so I thought that was a really interesting topic to work with. So we've seen all kinds of interesting stuff. A lot of it kind of anchors around creativity particularly, and a lot of innovation stuff, but it really goes out into all kinds of areas, from dog training to food creation to destigmatizing death to being able to talk more vulnerably with your team, for example. Very, very broad.
And it seems like kind of the end product, I mean, you can take it however you want to once you have that mindset and the skills, as you mentioned, but it's call it a side hustle, call it a side project, a couple meetings here and there, but not necessarily a full-time job.
Yeah, and I think this was like maybe an assumption that I had early, or just a blind spot, was that this would be something for people that wanted to do this, period, like as a thing. And very quickly I realized, oh, actually, it's more like for me, where it is a big part of my work, but it's not the only bit of work I do. It's more, like you said, it's a component of the work, it's a side hustle, it's a product. So the session we ran in February, which was a month long, was very much geared towards, at the end of this, you'll walk away with a thing, a tangible workshop product, for want of a better word, that you can go and run, you can go and sell it, it's something that's far more tangible, as something you can go and use and sell and promote and market to people. So the skill set is definitely important, but we've also noticed that people are looking for like a clear outcome and a thing that they can sort of hold in their hands and go and bring to the people and communities they want to work with.
Yeah, I love that. And that's one of the workshops that I've obviously been very active in and grateful for is Podcasting Fellowship. And then the end result is having a podcast, and mm-hmm. and here we are. And so I love that idea of like leaving with something. And I'm really curious about that mindset thing, because that's really interesting, because it's the same type of thing for me with a podcast, right? It's like not necessarily like recording audio and publishing, it's a lot more of
connecting with people, creating a body of work, sharing the ideas, and that kind of podcaster, professional podcaster mindset is something that I'm hoping to adopt.
Yeah, I think the mindset thing is super important. It's something that I kind of picked up on from my work doing learning design, learning experiences with, you know, other collaborators and partners. And it kind of really crystallized for me in the last few months. So it, like you said, with podcasting, you run this podcast, I've done podcasting too. And I think the mindset part is as important, if not more so. Like, you can focus all your time on like editing and technical skills and production and stuff like that, but if you don't have the mindset of being a podcaster or thinking like a podcaster and being okay with shipping and being okay with conversations wandering off and being okay with it not being perfect and being curious and wanting to learn, I think having the thinking and approach first is can get you over the dips and hurdles that inevitably kind of kick in later. I think, like with a lot of our work, when we're doing anything kind of creative, again, I'll use that in a lowercase way, a small c creative, I think those hurdles and things that can get in our way are like trying to be perfect on production or perfect on editing or having X number of downloads or, you know, whatever response that we're trying to get. And I think having the mindset of just being okay with creating and just thinking like a podcaster thinks or thinking like someone who creates workshop thinks, I think that's a big part of it. And so in the workshops I do, like a quarter of the entire program is dedicated to how do we think like workshoppers. So almost unlearning. So how do we unlearn what we may have thought learning is, or what workshops are, or what, in your case, what podcasting is? It doesn't need to be in a massive studio. It doesn't need to be an hour long. There's all these kind of conventions around formats that we often believe to be true, but maybe often aren't. So I think spending that time kind of unlearning and relearning stuff and getting the right mindset is really important, because we can spend a lot of time on the kind of craft and technical skills, but if our original mindset is kind of stuck somewhere that's not helpful, then we're going to struggle to get out of the gate at all.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I love that way of thinking about getting out of the gate, producing the work, and kind of using your imagination and your instincts. Because when I first started the podcast, which does feel like ages ago, in the beginning, there was a bunch of people that kind of came to me and had their ideas of, you know, monetization, technical stack, like all these different things. And I was like, I'm just getting out of the gate here and I don't even really know what you're talking about. And being have the flexibility, and there was a term that we've used about a free range podcaster. And, you know, there is these norms, so to speak, but thinking like a free range podcaster and to say, you know, I'm doing this because this is how I want to do it. But also being professional and keep doing the work, I think has been really helpful for me.
Yeah, I think like a kind of parallel to that is I had a bit of a rant on Twitter. I don't usually do tweet storms, but I did, I think it was my first one. Did it this time last week. We were talking on a Saturday afternoon and I did it this time last week, which was around online courses. And I think a lot, obviously right now, a lot of people are thinking about online courses, and I totally get why. If you're trying to take your expertise online, or you're trying to like monetize somehow or create a new revenue stream, whatever it is, online courses can make a lot of sense. But going back to that mindset thing, doing an online course can feel like a really overwhelming thing, and it has a lot of kind of conventions and structure around it. And I guess, you know, the equivalent of podcasting would be doing like a fully fledged season with like great microphones and like really polished and theme music and all that stuff. And I think online courses often kind of have that structure as kind of the conventional part of the requirements, whereas being a free range podcaster, you don't need to do that stuff if you're thinking that way. And the thing that the analog that I was using around workshops and courses is that workshops have more fluidity to them. So you don't need to have all that stuff, because it's not all about you. It's about a group that you're just bringing along for an experience. You've got some ideas that you share and you can see where things go, and it has more of an open format, and again, more free range. And so I think when I was talking about this on Twitter, my point was online courses can be great, but often a better start point, especially when we're getting going, is just do a workshop. Do something that's more open, more free form, bring a few friends along, see what happens, test it out. And I think that totally jams with how you say about free range podcasting. It's it feels a little scarier because it's free range and it's open and it's the unknown and things might not work, as it were. But I also think that's really freeing, and it's kind of empowering because it means you don't have to worry about all these conventions and structures and mindsets and kind of resistance points and stories that we can tell ourselves about why it's not good enough or why it may not work or it's not right.
Yeah. And I love your pillars about learning, community, and collaboration with the workshops. Those are, that's definitely something that I've experienced and truly value more deeply than I initially expected. So I love how you're doing that.
Yeah. And it can sound a bit like cliched, like when everyone throws around the word community, but I do believe in like those kind of learning settings, like workshop settings, that group of people who are trying to do the same thing as you, and you're working together, either helping each other with projects or just bouncing ideas off each other. It is incredibly helpful because a lot of us, particularly now, are kind of isolated, either literally or figuratively. And I think that group learning and peer learning is like, it's incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of lowercase skills or technical skills that you think a workshop creator should look to develop?
That's a cool question. First one that comes to mind, actually, I'll give you two sets. They're quite different, but they kind of have a similar kind of endpoint, I suppose, in some ways. One is slide design, presentation design. You don't need loads of slides for workshops, whether in person or online, but they can help because it's being partly to be mindful of learning style. Some people are very visual learners, some people are very good auditory, and some people are not, you know, kinesthetic learners, and so on. But generally having some sort of visual aid to help convey story or to convey just instructions and prompts can be very useful. So having just a really basic grasp of what makes for a good simple slide, you don't need to become a graphic designer or become like some PowerPoint whiz, but just being able to communicate ideas and information clearly using a couple of slides, I think it can be really, really valuable. We've probably both seen like some horrendous PowerPoint decks that are terrible. We don't want death by PowerPoint, but I do think slide design, having a few key principles of just how to use color, how to use fonts, where's best to use imagery, how to just communicate points succinctly, like instructions for an activity, can be really helpful. And it's more to avoid what happens when it goes wrong. I've seen one of the pitfalls people fall into with workshops is when something's unclear. And when something is unclear and you're sending a group off to go and do something on their own, what you don't want is confusion and panic, because that's when it can become really challenging to kind of corral everyone back. So if you have really simple, clear, memorable slides, that can be really, really helpful and kind of a real leverage point. So I would say that's one little skill. You don't need to be an amazing graphic designer. It's just having some kind of basic understanding of what works and what doesn't. The other one, as a skill that I'd say is really helpful to develop, and for me has been something that I've got better at. I'm not brilliant at it, but I'm getting better at it, is active listening. And maybe one sort of short, succinct way of putting that is being able to really be present when somebody is talking, really hearing what they're saying, and being able to play back what they said. Now, you may not be able to play it back verbatim, but if you're able to mirror it back or paraphrase it, or at least kind of summarize what they were saying, that active listening and the speaker is then able to feel heard by you is enormously helpful. And also it's really clarifying. So if you are active listening to somebody, you're actively listening to somebody and you play back what you think they just said, and they say, well, that's kind of right, Howard, but not quite, because what I meant with this was actually that. That can be the difference between success and failure in a conversation or in a workshop or a course or a class or whatever you're doing together. So I think being able to actively listen to the people you are working with or people you're serving as a facilitator, and being able to either mirror what they said, being able to paraphrase what they said, or being able to summarize what they said, and just getting their feedback on, did I hear you right? I think that's an enormously powerful skill to have. So I'd say basic slide design, and be able to actively listen and respond and play back what you heard somebody say. It sounds really trivial and small. It's amazing how few people do it. When you do it, magic things can happen because people feel really heard and noticed. And it can be really helpful for obviously getting past confusion as well.
Okay. Well, yeah, I love the work that you're doing there. And
It's really cool. And I know it's going to be very impactful, has been. So that's great stuff, Howard. And one of the other main ideas I wanted to talk to you about was this concept of around hidden networks.
Mm.
And for many of us, we always have blind spots in so many different ways. And would love to hear how you think about hidden networks and how we can, knowing that we are blocked by them or knowing that they can be an issue, how do we make progress from that?
So it's an interesting time for us to be talking about this because obviously like networks and networking have sort of changed to a degree in our new paradigm. I'm interested to see how it sort of plays out from a sort of anthropological and sort of human behavior perspective as maybe lockdowns and our new normal extend out, we'll see. But this concept is something I kind of stumbled across, to be honest. So I run a program, an accelerator program for the New York City Mayor's Office called AMP NYC. I'm the curriculum and like program lead on that. It's a really awesome program run by the city government for media and entertainment founders here in New York, where I'm based. And we've run three cohorts of that program. It's been a really great experience. I've loved it. I've learned tons from doing it, connected with some great people. And one of the things we talk about in our module on sales and marketing is the concept of the 1990. And some people may be familiar with this. It's something that Charles Arthur coined in Wired magazine probably over a decade ago. And the simple kind of top line of it is if you get a group of, say, 100 people online, and he was talking about social networks, so online networks like a Facebook, for example. If you get a group of, say, 100 people, one person will create content, 10 will interact with it, and the other 89 will just view it. So this is like a fairly well-known kind of model, I guess. And we round up the 89 to 90 just to make the numbers work. You've got this 1% that create, 9% that interact, and 90% that view. And so that works really well for social networks. But I kind of stumbled upon this idea that it works really well in real life too, just like in any other network. So that was more pertaining to kind of content and interaction with content, but I think it works with interaction with humans as well. And so in the AMP program, we started talking about this and we realized it started to get really interesting when we were thinking about how do we connect with other people. And most of the time, we will either focus on the 1%, so the kind of nerds that are the people that will create if we ask them to, or like really behind us, it could be our spouse or our best friend or our podcast host or whoever it is, the person that's like really behind, you know, backing what we're doing. If we give those people attention, they usually tend to like love us passionately for what we're doing. And we've probably all got those people in our lives. So it could be like the most engaged customers or like experts who are in our field, whatever it is. So most of us either focus on that 1% or we focus on the 90%, which is the broader consumer base. So that's the general audience for our thing. And those are the people that generally don't care enough to make complex choices. They want things to be simple and they'll probably rely on someone else to make a decision for them. And obviously it's different in all realms of my life. I'll be in the 90 in some areas, I'll be in the 1 in others, depending on what the topic is. The area that really people don't pay that much attention to is the 9, because we're usually so wrapped up in the 1, which is the nerds, not to necessarily be confused with early adopters, but the nerds, the people that are like super into the thing, or we're trying to broadcast to the 90. And instead, the 9 are these kind of curators who are quite opinionated. They use you to position themselves, which I think is a really interesting way of thinking about stuff. If they're using you, your work to position themselves to others, they love to tell others what you're doing, but they're also a little bit fickle that if we give them too much attention, they'll probably disappear onto the next thing. And they can even be like competition, they can be peers, they could be like activists, maybe like journalists, maybe kind of fans that are at the edges. And so taking this kind of 1990, which is, you know, a fairly well-known model, and thinking about it through the lens of people, then gets to this idea of the hidden network. So if you think about the 9% of your base of people or the audience, within that 9, there are probably some people who are hidden away who you haven't thought about. And that's where the hidden network starts to show up. And those people start to lead you into lots of interesting places. So one of the activities we run in this accelerator program is thinking about your 9, and then also thinking about all the possible networks relevant to your work. And then the third part is see where all the possible networks and the nine start to cross over. So if you start thinking a hidden network could be, I use the example like my local coffee shop, and that's a network. I'm friends with the guys in there. There's a dude who works at IBM who I chat to most mornings, but I don't know him particularly well. That's a net. We have a little network. It's a little community. We all know each other, five or six of us in the coffee shop. That's like a hidden network. If I start to take that with my 9%, all the people in my audience who are the nine, and start to see where the little overlaps are and see where the little connecting points are, we've noticed that like really interesting stuff starts to show up. And all these kind of new connections show up and new kind of commonalities between people. And you can start to bring new people into your audience and start to broaden your reach or deepen your reach with a lot of people that you maybe didn't think were part of your work and your audience. So this kind of 199 topic on one side, and then these hidden networks, which just could be anywhere in your life, not necessarily your work. It could be the coffee shop or activity or something that you enjoy doing as a hobby, family thing, whatever it is. And then you start to kind of overlay them on top of each other. That's where you start to see some really interesting stuff show up.
This is so fascinating. The example of the coffee shop, that's got my mind spinning so much right now. So the takeaway then is to know that there's these networks that exist. Usually people think about, you know, their company as a network, and or their college that they went to as a network. But you're suggesting there's these other different networks, and then also trying to map them and seeing how that could potentially maybe imagine what is possible after you see these different commonalities. And so then it's maybe, if I'm hearing you right, it's like emailing somebody that's in the nine and saying, you know, I'm really passionate about this. Maybe you know somebody, I'm looking for this. I'd like to help you out with that. Knowing that there is another network behind the nines.
Yeah. So you almost map them separately. So you can map a bunch of hidden ones first. So the way we do this activity, I'll just sort of walk you through it quickly, is firstly, would be like map all the possible networks relevant to your work. And it doesn't necessarily mean the work. It could be relevant to your work. So that could get very, very broad. And I use like the coffee shop is one place, like people who are into like cycling, people who read South American literature, people who also used to DJ and don't anymore because they sold their records, like me. Could be any kind of network you've got. List all those out. Go specific, but go quantity above quality first, and then start to map the connective tissue between all of those little pieces. And straight away, you'll probably see some interesting stuff show up. There'll be these little themes that start to appear. People who are all into martial arts, or, oh yeah, they're all people that read at 8 in the morning in the coffee shop, or whatever it is. You'll start to get those. As a kind of separate activity, think about who your 9% are. And if you really start thinking about it, there'll be people that you haven't thought about, I guarantee it, who are interacting and curating and opining on your work, either directly or kind of second degree. I will push on this point for the listeners, like definitely on this, push yourself, because there will be people in the nine you're not thinking of. Once you've got that 9%, once you've got those hidden networks, you can start to see there might be some interesting links between them. So you might start to see there's commonalities between one of those small networks and somebody in that nine you haven't spoken to before. And where you can start bridging this is starting to connect those people, because they share something in common. There's a worldview or a belief or a passion that they have. You know both of them. You can start to connect them in some way. You can do that through your work. You can build a community. You can run an event. You can create a workshop. You could send them the latest edition of the podcast that you loved, whatever it is. And that is where the magic bit really starts to happen, is you can start to take the hidden networks, the micro networks you already had, the 9% who are maybe a little bit hidden themselves, and then start to connect both groups together. Amazing. So it's very much a mapping exercise. So definitely get a big piece of paper, draw it on the floor, draw it on the table, whatever you want to do, map it out using some pen and paper, and then you'll start to see some magic stuff start to show up.
Amazing. Okay. Well, we've talked about a lot of the key ideas here that I wanted to talk about. Anything else that related to some of these topics that you're particularly passionate about, curious about?
The other thing I think that I'm most interested in and you kind of touched on it at the top of the episode, is future work and skills, and something that is more than a project, honestly. I mean, it's a full blade, it's a startup, is myself and my partner Jeffrey have been working on something called Fondo for the last nearly a year or so now. We've been quietly working on it. I wouldn't quite say it's in stealth, but we're definitely sort of in closed beta mode, now public beta. And the thesis behind that is that the world of work is not about jobs. It's actually about an interconnected ecosystem that's all connected up by skills. And skills are the most important node in the network. So we need to understand the skills we've got, and some of them might be hidden skills and skills that apply into interesting places that we might not think about. And from there, we can start to discover new things. We can open up our aperture to career opportunities and projects and portfolios that maybe we didn't think about before. And I think what we noticed from our research is a lot of people have quite narrow apertures just because of maybe how they grew up or the education system or what their parents told them or what society said was okay. And so they have a very fixed view of the world, a kind of narrow-ish view of the world. I think we all do to a degree. But what Jeffrey and I are very curious about is that a lot of the skills that we have built or the things we're interested in actually map into lots of interesting places. So we're starting to show people through data visualizations and kind of little games and quizzes that, okay, the skills you've built as a podcaster or a product manager or a chef, they're actually really applicable into this area and that area. So we're getting people to share skills with us, tell us your skills, tell us a little bit about what you're interested in, your personality and your interests. And from there, we'll serve you up a bunch of interesting career opportunities and career options that you may not have thought about before. And what we're just about to launch next is connecting with experts and professionals within those domains. So if you're somebody who's been working in finance and we start to show you that there could be an interesting opportunity for you in food, we will connect you with a food professional to start asking them questions, get feedback, learn about their career path, learn about their career pivots. And we're particularly interested in the transitional and pivot points people have had. So that is a project that we've been working on for a little while. It gets pretty big and pretty complex pretty quickly, but we're super excited about it. And I think right now people are seeking, people are in transition, and then a lot of people are looking at what's next. And so we're really working hard to see how we can help people figure out what's next in what is a very uncertain world. But our belief is very much around surfacing skills and seeing how they can translate in different and interesting ways.
Amazing. Awesome, Howard. Well, I know we could talk for a lot longer.
And we always can. We often do.
But listeners' attention is precious. So please let listeners know where they can follow up and support your work.
Yeah, that's kind. Thank you. So my website is Howard Gray, G-R-A-Y. That's Gray with an A, .net. My little learning studio, which is where I do my workshops, is called Wavetable, as David, you mentioned. Thank you. That's at wavetable.net as well. And Fondo, which is the future of work, future of skills startup. If you want to go and explore, it's free to get started on there. You can go to itsfondo, fondo.com. So howardgray.net, wavetable.net, and itsfondo.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Howard.
Thank you so much, David. Thanks for having me.
Hey, friend. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Wanted to also let you know about my monthly newsletter called One Email Away, where I fundamentally believe that we are all one email away from new opportunities. And if there's a way that I could potentially help you to connect with other people, I would love to do that. So One Email Away, you can sign up for my newsletter on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. You can also see the One Email Away section, but just want to take this moment to say thank you for listening to this episode. Really excited for us to build and grow our portfolio careers together.